Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca, and the TSN app, your home smart speaker. Brian Hazy, O'Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. We've got another hockey game tonight. The Islanders looking to survive, and it's game six back on the island, right? Potentially the last game at the Nassau Coliseum, so they'll be out tailgating right now. They'll be rocking. That place will be hopping tonight.
Oh, yeah.
And I could see the Islanders with a pretty good first period. I could see them coming out flying. They might get on the board first. I just feel like Tampa's going to find a way to win this game tonight. You know, even if it's comeback in the third into overtime, they're the better team.
They just look like they know. They got the winning recipe, man. They went through it last year, and it's like they're going in there knowing that the Islanders are going to throw everything at them. They're probably going to have to do what Montreal did last night, withstand the first 10 minutes, and then just put it on the line and see what happens. Wouldn't shock me at all if they won it tonight in the road.
It's potential. I just, the one thing that I think I've done or been guilty of is I've just underestimated teams. I've underestimated the Islanders. Just when you think a team is down or it looks like, looks like this or looks like that, you're like, and I'm going to do the same thing with Vegas. Like, that series isn't over. Like, it's really two games, and same thing. Montreal needs to win one of the next two, but it's not like Vegas couldn't win two games in a row either. Like, that's and I look at it, and I know Tampa is the experienced team. They've been there and done that. It's just, I feel like I've counted teams down and out.
Yeah.
And this is,
you can't
been
do
just
it with
such...
Vegas, Jamie, because you say they lost the first two against Colorado. And you have to think that right now what they're capable of, but I can't get the idea out of my head right now is how did you beat Colorado the way you're playing right now?
Well,
because up front, offensively, Petrangelo is the only guy that has anything going offensively. Like, he is the only guy noticeable offensively. They're defensemen. That just goes into another story, how St. Louis let that guy go, because that's nonsense.
All I could think about, and maybe this is just bringing it back to here, like, if the Leafs had it, like, that Petrangelo's a hell of a player. Like, you lay eyes on the way that he plays, because he's just so good at everything. Like, he finds the net from the point. He gets pucks through. He's strong on his stick. He's not the fastest player, but he's big, strong. He's got some bite. Like, he's a hell of a player. Like, all I could think about is if, now, they ended up getting Brody, which was a great fit. But wasn't Petrangelo linked to Toronto at some point?
Yeah,
I think of course everyone is. He's from
King
City.
I know, but I mean, whether he wanted to come here, whether they couldn't make it work or whatever, but, like, he's a hell of a player. Like, that's all I can think about when I watch him. He has been one of the only consistent Vegas players who I think has been dangerous every time he's been on the ice. And I can't say
it says something
about
Vegas. I mean, it's they really have had nothing offensive throughout the whole series. Like, even in the first game when they played well, it was the Shea Theodore, show for the most part.
Right.
He had a goal and he set up the Alec Martinez, who's another defenseman, in the play of the game, arguably the play of the series so far. But they're the forwards for Vegas, and I don't expect them to just show up in Montreal now. Like, who's going to show up? What, Marchessault is all of a sudden going to be dancing tomorrow night? Or, William Karlsson? This guy
all
had
all three
one.
Of them. They lost. They've all lost. They can't make a playoff.
They have
there.
Nothing.
Well,
they've got nothing.
The thing that I say, but if we go back to game three where they put up 45, like, Price was the difference that night. Like, if I think they're going to come with that type of heat tomorrow. Like, Montreal can't just go, hey, we won in Vegas, so we're going on to the cup. Like, that's not how these playoffs work. It's one game, it's amnesia. That's how you have to have it, and that's what the Islanders have to do tonight, and I think that's what Vegas has to do going into Montreal. It's like, hey, we just need to get it to game seven. Because if you would have told me yesterday, and I think we talked about it on this show, like, if Montreal said, just get us to game seven, and we'll take our chances at that, they would take that.
And now the shoe's on the other foot, though.
Exactly.
For obvious reasons. If you're Vegas, right, you're like, just give us a chance to do what we did to – was it Colorado, I guess, in seven?
Yeah, Colorado.
And give yourself an opportunity to win in your home barn, pack building, and do what you've done before. The shift in terms of who's got the pressure on them, who doesn't, what the expectation is, has been pretty drastic.
It really
has, as of now, it's Montreal series to lose. Like, yeah. They got two cracks at it, and they're playing extremely well. I guess the one thing you might be able to take out of it if you're in Vegas is you probably won't expect Montreal to perform that well again the final two games. You know, like we said this earlier, Pooley said it, that's the best game they've played all year. Are you going to top the best game you played all year? Maybe you can. Maybe you will. Maybe you don't need that. I'm not sure you do. You know, if you have 90% of what you did a couple of nights ago, you're probably going to win one of the next two games.
I understand it's tough to match Hayes, but sometimes it's fuel. They're like, man, if we can all work that hard and just be dialed in like that, that's how good we can be. So don't count them out for being just as good the next game, because sometimes teams, they use it fuel for the fire.
Ooh. Well, yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. The NBA playoffs continue, and the Eastern Conference is going to be tipping off. And on the Western side of things, what a finish last night!
Yeah,
where DeAndre Ayton coming out of an inbound alley oop with 0.9 on the clock, he looked a little bit confused, like he wasn't sure if it was going to count. An inbound alley oop, you can get that down at 0.9. Like, mm-hmm. that was over, and what a spectacular finish. And now they head to L.A. for Game 3, and it sounds like Chris Paul is planning on returning for Game 3.
I love it. I love it.
Here is Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider and senior writer. Watching that live, Brian, did you just assume it was good, or were you waiting to see how the refs were going to react to that play last night?
I was stunned. I just couldn't believe how it went. I want to say that it looked easy, but of course it wasn't easy. I mean, I would give Jay Crowder and DeAndre Ayton 10 tries in an empty gym, just the two of them, to hit the timing like that. Because he wasn't just standing there under the basket waiting for the ball to be thrown. He was on the move, running a curl, and spinning around and going up there. The ball arrived the same time that his hand did. And not only that, but, you know, this is one thing I don't think can be underestimated. Crowder was in the corner. Very unusual that you would inbound a ball from there. Most of the time you're inbounding the ball from, you know, under the basket out of bounds or the sideline out of bounds, halfway up the sideline. You don't practice throwing the ball from over there. You may play a whole season and have the ball out of bounds there three or four times for a whole team. It's a very awkward situation. So for them to execute that, I just don't believe they practiced it from that spot. And if they have, I'll be glad to be corrected. But it was almost like a soccer play, like a corner kick. That's what was so amazing to me, is that the pass, the timing was like they'd been doing it for years together. So it was just a stunning play all around. And a lot goes into a game like that to win or lose. But, my God, what an incredible finish.
What's this experience been like for you, Brian, not being asked what's LeBron going to bring tonight? How big is LeBron going to be? LeBron this. I mean, this is his time of year. Golden State, it's like it's a whole new experience, a lot of fresh faces. What are your thoughts on all of it, big picture?
Yeah, I mean, look, LeBron's been in the finals 10 times. I mean, that's a central part of our lives, you know. And so, but to me, you know, I mean, you're asking a fair question, but it's all a job to me. I cover what's there for me to cover. I actually think it's a good thing to have some new blood. I wish LeBron wouldn't have been eliminated because his team was injured. I wish they'd been eliminated a little bit differently. But, you know, this is one of the things I see people saying, that there's an asterisk to this because there's so many guys injured. And I'm like,
come on.
The reason it's so hard to win is because guys get injured. If anything, this title is more valuable because so many guys couldn't make the gauntlet. So, I think the teams that are left standing, it's a credit to them that they're still standing.
With Brian Windhorst from ESPN, NBA insider and senior writer. So it was somewhat of a triumphant night for people up here in Toronto last night, when the card flipped at 7 and it wasn't their logo and they move up to 4, you know, you get greedy when, you know, ESPN hits a break and you're like, all right, let's go here. Like, let's see if they can come up first. And it was somewhat anticlimactic, or it ended quickly. But moving from 7 to 4 is huge value. And, you know, they've got some heavy lifting to do anyway this offseason. But when you consider how big of a disaster their year was for a multitude of reasons, you know, they're in Tampa, COVID, everything went against them for the most part, but they did tank down the stretch. is it worth it? I mean, how do you look back on the Raptors season now, considering what we learned last night?
Huge event for the Raptors. Huge. I mean, there are years when the difference between 4 and 7 isn't that much. And there are years when the difference between 2 and 4 is massive. This doesn't appear to be one of those years. Now, having said that, we just had one of the best rookies drafted 12th. So nobody has the market cornered on the draft. That's the nature of the beast. But to move up into the top 4 in this draft is a huge score for the Raptors. It absolutely opens them to getting potentially a future franchise player. And the interesting thing will be, you know, there are scenarios there where Jalen Suggs, who I am not a draft expert, guys. I cannot, you know, give you chapter and verse on all of these top prospects like some of my coworkers can, who've been tracking these guys since they were 12. I'm not one of those guys. But I love Jalen Suggs from Minneapolis out of Gonzaga. I think he's a dynamic point guard. And if Jalen Suggs is sitting there at 4 and you draft him, it totally informs the way you may go forward. Like, you know, Kyle Lowry may be, you know, gone no matter what, but it totally informs the way you make your decisions if you can get a guy like that. And you know, you look at a team like Oklahoma City, who was going into the night with the possibility of getting picks 1 and 5, and not pie in the sky, like, 0.5%. Like, they had real percentage chances of getting 1 and 5, and they walk away with 6. They are on the outside looking in. The Raptors are on the inside looking out, and they have a whole bunch of options they can go to. They could also trade the pick. You know, I mean, you know, what if you call Philadelphia and ask about Ben Simmons? I mean, there's a lot of options that just opened up for the Raptors.
You just mentioned Kyle Lowry. Have you been kind of sniffing around on that? What are you hearing on him? Like, the likelihood of him returning to Toronto. We had their GM on earlier, and he mentioned the importance of Lowry to the organization. How do you see it playing out, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, Kyle is Mr. Raptor, right? I mean, his number will be retired. He helped bring the championship. There's nothing needs to be said about him. The thing about it is, when they elected not to trade him, they lost their control of the situation. So if he wants to walk to a place like Miami, which I could understand that he might want to go there, he's got a close relationship with Jimmy Butler. They're going to potentially have plenty of salary cap space. My speculation is that he may have to wait a few minutes while other things play out. He may be a guy who has to let the market, you know, go for a day or two. And I don't even necessarily mean the opening of free agency, because free agency all gets done before free agency these days. But he may have to wait to let things develop. But, you know, the Raptors could sign and trade him, certainly, but I wouldn't necessarily count on that.
Yeah, I think their offseason could go so many different ways, you know, and in many ways it has to begin with the architect of it all, and Masai. And you've been on the show countless times, and we've talked about Masai and his scenario, and I suppose nothing has changed today as opposed to where it was a month or two ago. But if the dominoes fall, I can picture a scenario where they are back in a very positive situation next season, and especially when you consider what happened last night. But do you see a fork in the road? Like, is there a potential road or a potential door that could lead to multiple seasons here of kind of dark clouds hanging over this team? Or do you think it's one and done for them going through what they just went through?
Well, I really like their talent. I just, you know, they were dealt a very difficult hand this year, and they didn't play their best. And there was probably a number of reasons for that. So, do I think they're going to be a championship contender next season? Not, I can't say that right now, but they could definitely be a high-level playoff team. And, you know, getting this pick, you know, can, you know, you're not doing a rebuild, you're doing just a pause. And, you know, you could have done a 3-year rebuild where you tanked all year long and not gotten the 4th pick in a draft like this. This accelerates everything for them.
Yeah, it really does. And I wonder what the view is throughout the league about tanking. That, I mean, tanking is a part of sports, and it might be more prevalent in the NBA than anywhere else. But you look at what's happened in Philly now. Like, they were the definition of tanking in the process and all that, and it has not got them to where they want to. Although on the flip side, I guess Phoenix was pretty bad for a while. I don't know if it was tanking necessarily, but you look at where they are. But look at what Oklahoma City's going through and what you just detailed a few moments ago, Brian. Like, they're putting as many tickets into the lottery, and it didn't come up for them, so now they kick it down the curb that much more, down the street that much more, and hope it works for them in the future. Is where does tanking, you know, what is the definition of it in the NBA, and how do people around the league feel about it today compared to maybe where it was a couple of years ago?
All right, let's just be 1,000,000,000% honest, right? The NBA is about whether you've got the two or three star players. Everything else is just window dressing. You can develop guys. You can develop your backup point guard. You can get your role-playing center. You can have your shooting guard. You can have your defensive specialist. All that stuff, it doesn't not matter. But if you don't have those two or three players, we're all just messing around and filling the void of our lives. Okay.
Yeah.
So your quest. If you're a general manager or an owner of a team, is got to get the stars, got to get the stars, got to get the stars. It's almost like tattooed on your forehead. Got to get the stars, got to get the stars. That's what it's all about. Anything else is, you know, whatever. So there's only a couple of ways you can get stars. You can sign them, you can trade for them, or you can draft them. Well, I don't think Toronto is going to be signing too many guys in free agency. I do think some point they could get a star in free agency under the right circumstances, but they can't bank on that. They traded, that's how they got their title. They traded for one. So, of course, you look for that. But your best route is to draft one. And that is why these teams sacrifice everything at times to try to go get that to happen in the draft. And because of the stakes and because of the way it's set up and because there's so few of them and the impact that they have, you don't have to be like a PhD from Harvard to analyze the situation and see what you have to do. And that's all that Sam Hinkie said. It really wasn't that revolutionary. It was actually pretty elementary. He was just willing to go to the nth degree to do it. And so that's what this is about. The Raptors didn't have a chance to win a championship until they had one or two or three best players in the NBA. So that's what all of their decisions have to revolve around.
Well, let's see what happens come the end of July and throughout the offseason. Always great to catch up with you. Thank you for doing this, Brian.
Take care, guys.
There's Brian Windhorst of ESPN.
I like Brian Windhorst.
I do, too.
Yeah, he's to the point, man.
Yeah.
He doesn't sugarcoat anything.
That's it. I like it. I like what he brings to the table.
Well, he's right. I mean, a lot of times you overthink it, or you try to get a read on some sort of philosophy change, and ultimately it does come down to who's got the best players.
That's it. Get to the nuts and bolts. Who's got the top three that can get the job done?
Yep. And the reason Brooklyn is not playing tonight, it's because two of their top three didn't play or couldn't play.
And I'll tell you what, you get that Chris Paul back, watch out, because that's dangerous out there.
And Devin Booker took him a while, but he's here now. He's arrived, and he's a star. DeAndre Ayton, they took first overall in 18, I believe it was. Took him a few years, but he's a star. And Chris Paul's a star. Like, there's your three. And then you fill
Chris
it
Paul's
out,
and
you're loaded.
Chris Paul's kryptonite around is not around right now. Like, Steph Curry ain't coming up the gut here to just crush him.
That's right.
Yeah. So you never know. They can pull it off.
Well, and until we hear otherwise, Kawhi's not lurking in the background either. You know, like, I don't think he's going to play. So,
which sucks. I mean, for him, you know,
it does.
And them.
And for the Clippers, because of what we just said, they can't win without Kawhi.
Right?
Like, they have to have him, more than likely. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, shout out to Brian Windhorst. Thank you for joining us, as always. Kevin Kilbane will join us on the Euros. Crazy afternoon today. What we can see moving forward. We're into the round of 16. So what does he see happening? Biggest surprise, biggest disappointment. We'll get to that more. The Travelers is going on down in Connecticut. We should probably take a couple of pegs.
Sure.
Might as
guru?
Well.
The guru? How about this one is just guru? Guru gives us five guys each.
Five guys each? That's a bit
three
rich.
Guys no. each. Guru gives us a three-pack. All right,
guys,
guru?
You guys choose – two, and I'll choose three, or vice versa?
No,
just give us three guys each.
That's it.
Three guys each?
We're not taking anybody. We'll live with what you give us.
Guru handing out three packs of picks. So we'll get to that and more coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. You guys see Robin Leonard trolling Maple Leaf fans on Twitter? So, yeah, I guess he's on the plane, and he fly to Montreal. Maybe they're there already. And he just asked, you know, what's up, Twitter? I'm a bit bored on a plane, dot, dot, dot. Send me some questions. And someone asked him, which goalie currently playing in the NHL would you not want to go toe-to-toe with? And he responds with David Ayers, which is highly inappropriate. But anyway, what are you going to do? The Leafs are just taking beatings. They haven't played in over a month.
Wow.
They always come up. Robin Leonard taking a bit of a shot or pumping the tires of David Ayers. I guess you could look at it that way.
Yeah. Lou winning the GM award. Like just,
that one hurt. Yeah, that one stung a little bit. Oh, Lou Lamoriello's moving and shaking. It's all good.
Isn't that back-to-back for Lou?
No, he didn't. I don't know who. I don't remember who won it last year.
Yeah, he won it last year.
You're kidding me. He's won it back-to-back?
Back-to-back, yeah.
What did he do so differently this year?
I don't know.
Like he won it last year.
Paul Mary.
Well, the cap. Yeah, I mean, you know, manage
the cap.
You name
it. Manage the cap back to back. That's just drawing the Leafs. Anyway, all right. The Euros continue. We're into the last 16, which I love. Very dignified way of putting it. Into the knockout stage, and we've each got three teams left in the tournament. And to break it all down, we're joined now by longtime Irish international TSN Euro 2020 analyst. Awesome to be a part of the crew. Great to have him on for the first time. Here's Kevin Kilbane. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm very good. You got my name right, so thanks for that.
Yeah, no, I believe me, over here that gets tortured a lot. Is it a butchered name from Canadians? Like,
that's
what is up with that? Why can't people figure it out?
Yeah, do you know what? Well, I watching the hockey here and there as well, and I hear the boy that plays for the Canadians called Gallagher. He's known as Gallagher, isn't he? So
yep.
I'm hopeful that one or two names might become normal for normal people, or for people to get right. My name's Kilbane, and it looks like it's pronounced Kilbane, and that's the way it's been butchered over in England over the years.
Right.
That's a legit name. Like when you're doing a fill out or something and someone asks for a name, like you could have a serious look and just say Kilbane. And they know what's up pretty quick.
Don't mess around with that.
You got an Irishman there, so he should know.
That's right. O knows what's up. Jeff O'Neill. What's your full name, O?
Jeffrey Paul Flanagan O'Neill.
Oh, what a name.
Yeah.
Shouldn't it be O Flanagan O'Neill? Is that possible over there or what? You only stick with one O. Is it possible to have two in the same name or what?
Not for
I've
me.
I've never heard that, actually.
No. Flanagan's my mom's last name, so they gave that to me as my middle name.
There's
a lot that comes along with those two names, I'll tell you.
Oh, I can imagine. A rich history. A rich Canadian/Irish history. Well, we're into the final 16 here. And there's obviously, you know, in a tournament like this, there's always going to be surprises. There's always going to be disappointments. Is there one in particular, in terms of a disappointment, of teams that may have missed, was there one shock? Or is this basically played out the way you thought it might, Kevin?
Well, there could have been a shock today. Looking at Germany going up against Hungary, Hungary was probably given no chance in that amazing group that we saw, Group F. But Germany managed to get through one way or another. I think all the top teams that we expected to get through have got through. The Dutch have maybe surprised. Netherlands have surprised the way that they've played. Italy have maybe surprised one or two. Maybe not necessarily me. They're on this great unbeaten run. They've probably looked the most impressive, but they've not really played any of the top sides yet. So it's going to be interesting to see what Italy can do when they get to the knockout stages. But we got Germany, France and Portugal through from that Group F, which we wanted them all through. But they've got tricky ties now once they've got through the group stages.
Well, and we were talking about that earlier today. Like England feels very good about their chances, like they do every 2 years. You know, whether it's at the Euros or the World Cup, they're always convinced they're going to win something. They never do. They haven't since the late 60s. But they're going to be at Wembley. They're playing pretty well. I mean, Scotland tested them maybe more than anyone else in the group stage, but now Germany's waiting for them. So what would you suggest the confidence level is in England, considering how they're playing, how they're built, but also who they will play in the next round, being that it's Germany in their history?
Yeah, that's what goes against them, the history between the two nations. You mentioned 66 or late 60s when England beat Germany in that World Cup final. But since then against Germany, they struggled. They struggled in Italy in 1990, I think it was 96, and 2006 in the World Cup in Germany, where Germany put them out. So there's a lot of history between the two nations. Yes, there is. But judging from England over the years, whenever, as you say, every 2 years or every 4 years when World Cups come around or whenever it's going to be, everyone in England suggesting that they're going to win it. This time, the hype has been, it's probably gone as high as I've seen it, actually, as far as long as I can remember, because of the talent that they've got within their side. So it's going to be interesting to see what England actually do against the Germans, because Germany have been hit and miss through the group. They played really well, I felt, for the first two games, albeit they lost to France. And today against Hungary, they weren't the greatest. So I don't know. I think Germany might actually beat them, believe it or not. I think Germany will beat them, but it's going to be an open game. It'll be an attacking match, I feel, yeah.
We're chatting with Kevin Kilbane, Irish international, TSN Euro 2020 analyst. And Ronaldo adding to his own record book today. I believe that was 109 international goals that he scored today. And obviously Messi, you know, he can't play in this tournament. So the comparison, I guess it stops at the Euros. But where do you stand on that debate? It's been ongoing for the better part of 10, 12, 15 years. Messi versus Ronaldo. Is there one in particular, if you were building a team and you could only take one guy in his prime, which one would you take and why?
Oh, in the prime? Lionel Messi. I think he's the greatest player that's ever played the game. If you're looking at a player that can do so many different things on a pitch, who could act as a playmaker, who can score goals, who can create in the final third in tight areas, I think Messi is the standout player. The one thing you'd maybe put against both players is that Lionel Messi had so many talented players around him in Barcelona's side, in Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, and Cristiano Ronaldo, in many respects, has had to do a lot of the hard work on his own. So I take the argument all day long. I was lucky enough to have played against both players, but I just think for sheer talent and natural ability and somebody who has maybe transcended the game differently, I'd have to go with Messi. I just think he, in my eyes, epitomises everything that's brilliant about the game. I think he's quite understated as well. And, yeah, I go with Messi just over Ronaldo, yeah.
You've got, obviously, a long history of playing international soccer with Ireland. And I saw a clip today that went viral. I'm sure you saw it, Kevin. And I'm sure, you and Noodles saw it, too. The one guy making a drinks run, a booze run for him and the boys. He had, like, 24 pints stacked because walking up and down the stairs. And it's like 25% capacity, 50% capacity, but it's still so loud, and it's so awesome. I mean, that's just something we don't necessarily have over here, maybe for football stadiums. Hockey, if you get a great barn on a Saturday night, you might have a crazy crowd that could potentially rival what we see in Europe. But what's that like playing when, you know, let's say you're at home on the road, neutral site, whatever it might be, if you're in a big game and it's a packed building and people are going nuts and the chants are happening before kickoff, what's that experience like?
It's second to none. I was lucky, you know, to play for some great clubs and we had some great nights. But the standout of my career was always playing for Ireland. That's the only thing I wanted to do as a boy. Once I watched Ireland play major tournaments at the Euros and the World Cup in Italy in 90, that's all I wanted to do. So we had some, of course, some bad days, some horrendous days actually along the way. But qualifying for the World Cup in 02 when we had to go to Iran, actually, in a playoff. So we had a two-legged game in Iran. We beat them at home 2-0. And in many respects, we should have had the job done more handily, a lot more easier, actually, in the first leg. But then we had to go out to Tehran, and we had 100,000 out there in Iran. And it was just crazy. You couldn't hear yourself speak before the game when we go out to get warmed up. And they're the days and there's the atmospheres that you absolutely do miss, you know. Playing for Everton at Goodison, it's a very old stadium. I don't know if any of you guys know Goodison Park. You probably would have heard of it, but it's an old-fashioned stadium. It's built in one of the housing estates, really, in Liverpool. So it's very different from the modern-day football stadiums or soccer stadiums that you would see. So a packed house under the lights at Goodison Park was very, very special. We had some great nights there as well, but playing for Ireland was always my dream. So once I got the opportunity to play for Ireland, and we had some great nights at Lansdowne Road and the Aviva Stadium as it became when it was renamed. But yeah, some special days, both for club and country. Yeah, and they're the ones that you miss. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it's still a good enough scene. Good knowing that there's 25% capacity, 50%. That's better than nothing like we went through for the better part of 18 months. But it's not quite normal, but we're getting there soon. We got to ask you about our own teams. I mean, we're very selfish on the show. We gamble, we goof on each other all the time.
And who's got what?
Well, let me run this through, okay? So these are the three teams. I have England, Denmark, Germany. So England and Germany are playing the next round. That's a guaranteed ticket through to the final eight. England, Denmark, Germany. O's got Netherlands, Italy, France. Noodles has got Spain, Belgium, Portugal. Who do you like of those three teams?
Right, I'll go on the first three. So England, Germany,
and Denmark.
Well, I actually think Denmark will beat Wales. So I think you've got two teams in the last eight. Is how I would look at it. Denmark have got great momentum with them, of course, after that awful incident with Christian Eriksen. So they've got a good momentum with them. I fancy Germany, as I was saying earlier, so I think you've probably got Germany and Denmark in. Who's the next three, sorry, again?
Netherlands, Italy, France.
Right, oh, yeah. So Italy, oh, yeah. Italy have got Austria. I think Italy have got a great chance. The way they've been playing, not necessarily been tested yet, but I fancy Italy. So I think Italy will beat Austria. Netherlands, I'm trying to think who they've got now, off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right here. Netherlands has Czech Republic in the next round.
Oh, yeah, I think that's a Netherlands victory as well there. So you're going through there. France, I absolutely fancy. I think France will get to a final at the very least. I think France have got the best squad of players. So France, yeah. I think you've got three there, I'd say, yeah, as well,
wow.
Going through. So
that's pretty good. Yeah. In a row. Okay, that's pretty good. And then the last one, Noodles. He's got Belgium and Portugal, so one are going out, and then he's got Spain, who will be playing Croatia in the next round.
Yeah, they're two tough games, actually, to call in the two of them. Spain were brilliant today, actually. It's not really happened for them throughout, but Croatia were also very good against Scotland as well, with Luka Modric playing there. Very hard one to call. I might go Croatia, actually, that one. I just think maybe momentum with them from the Scotland game, I might go with them. Portugal, Belgium, that's another cracking game, honestly, brilliant, brilliant game. I think that one to look forward to. But the reason why I'm going to go with Portugal, Belgium probably have the better players, I think, throughout. But Belgium have really played in second gear throughout. They've not been able to lift the game to the level that I've seen from Portugal. Portugal were poor against Germany, poor defensively, and they are vulnerable, don't get me wrong. But I just think Portugal, with the level of team that they've played against up to now, I think that just puts them just ahead, even though Belgium are ranked number one in the world. And I wouldn't be surprised if Belgium go on and win the game. But I just think the level of performance up to now from Portugal would just put me ahead of Belgium, even though they won the games handily enough in the groups that they were playing.
I like it. We're only halfway home, man. We're just rolling here. We got to get you back on, Kevin. This has been awesome. We really appreciate you doing this.
I'll come on for the last date, and then you can tell me how bad I've been with my predictions as well.
Yeah, well, we made the picks, so believe me, we're used to it. All we do is pick losers on the show. So we'll make sure to get you back, and we'll break down the
Thank you.
Analysis.
Thanks very much.
You got it, Kevin. Thank you for doing this. There's Kevin Kilbane from TSN's Euro 2020 coverage.
He liked O-Dog's team. He thought your team was good. I thought he paused on mine a few times.
Yeah, he didn't have a whole lot of good things about
that. Happy. And yeah, he doesn't like Belgium that much. He took Portugal, which is interesting.
I heard a story over the weekend that Belgium's got a bunch of good players that don't play well together type of thing. Like star players, but not a good team.
I know exactly who told you that. Forrest.
No, it wasn't, but it was in the family circle of that, yes. But big soccer fans over there, and they said Belgium's a great, great team with a bunch of individual great players, but not a good team.
Well,
that's what I was told.
So they're the Leafs, basically. They got some high-end talent, and it just doesn't connect at the right time. That's basically
Maybe.
What you're telling me. Everything comes back to the Maple Leafs somehow.
Yeah,
dude,
I'm tired of that.
I'm tired of that. It's like Montreal is doing great. It's like, and then blah, blah, blah into the Leafs. I'm off soon, and I can't wait to not hear that anymore. It's like I'll
be ready in September because it's coming back, and we'll see what happens in the offseason.
Wow, this is a big offseason for them. It really is. I think it is because Kyle's got an opportunity to reshape around that group. But that group is, you know, like, we'll have to see what this team looks like. And he's got decisions to make, like big decisions with Morgan Riley and, you know, Zach Hyman and stuff. Like, there's a lot of moving and shaking, not only for the Leafs, but a lot of teams, you know, expansion.
Big time. Big time. Well, exactly. Expansion, a weird draft where you haven't been able to scout properly. And the Leafs barely have any picks anyway. And a flat cap. So.
Yep.
There's it's always active. There's always turnover. There's always change. Whoever wins the cup in a few weeks is going to have a lot of turnover. But when you disappoint and when you hit the wall, then it's not like the expectations are going to change. No one's going to show up in October and say, "Ah, I think it's a, you know, a regrouping season for the Leafs," or they're just they're going to adjust here, and the big year is 2023. You know, everything's going to carry over, and if anything, the energy is just going to build and build and build, and the expectation will get higher and higher. So we'll see what they have in store. All right, we'll get to our travelers' picks, where the guru is going to pick three pack of players for each of us.
I'm ready. I've got him. I'm fired up.
Okay, so we'll get back to that. We'll get to our lays in the playoff faceoff tonight. We'll tee up the game, and the Jays are back in action tonight as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, the playoff faceoff is presented by Lays All Dressed. We've got the Islanders looking to survive tonight, and I think, you know, besides the talent discrepancy, there's also some experience discrepancy at play here. Like, the Islanders have been through the ringer. They've won series before, but Tampa won a cup last year. They've been in this position. They know how to close. How do the Islanders overcome what happened in Game 5 and find a way to push this through to Game 7?
Yeah.
I'm taking Tampa in this. I don't know. It's recency bias. They just spanked them 8-0, so I think Tampa just – they understand the value of getting this done and getting the rest and all of it, everything that goes into it. They're tested, man, and I don't think they lose this game tonight.
I agree. They're battle-tested, but I feel like the resilience of the Islanders, the resilience of some of these teams that we've counted out, have surprised. So I think it's going to be a close game. Do the Islanders make it a one-goal game, but then Vasilevsky takes over? Like, that's the difference, is you look at the weapons that Tampa has, but I'm not counting the Islanders out. That building will give them a little bit of life, too. You know, that building with fans saying potentially this could be the last game ever played there, I think they're going to give them some juice. So it'll be, for sure, I think, a real emotional start.
Yeah, I expect that, too. I think the Islanders should come out flying. They have to have a response. They got embarrassed a couple of nights ago.
Yeah, like, it was a drubbing.
You lose 8-0 in the playoffs, in the semifinals. That is as bad as it can get. I mean, it was historical in nature how embarrassing it was. So I expect a big response. I think the building will be hopping. But I think that building, there'll be nervous energy in there, and it can get quiet quickly, right? Like, look at Vegas, man. That was a quiet building last night. That place is known
for just...
They booed them. They were booing them at the end of the second period.
First time I ever heard that, which is scary to think, in a four-year organization. They were booed for the first time.
Well, you get a taste of it, right? And all of a sudden you think, this is what I deserve as a fan. And they've been very lucky in Vegas. They've known nothing but winning. Nothing but winning. So their team is up against it. It's 3-2, and they're being booed at the end of the second period. But, that'll happen tonight. Like, if it gets ugly for the Islanders tonight, if they play like they did a couple of nights ago, there will be boos.
For sure.
At Nassau Coliseum. You can bank on that.
Yep.
That's going to happen. So we'll see what happens there tonight. And the playoff faceoff is all about Lay's. And Lay's is facing off against Ruffles All Dressed, Doritos Sweet Chili Heat, and Smart Food White Cheddar with their three new potato chip flavors available for a limited time. Jay's back in action tonight. Robbie Ray, he has the tightest uniform in baseball. If he gets tested, or not tested, but searched for a foreign substance, what's he going to do? Like, you can't get that belt off. Those, you know, when we saw what we saw at a Scherzer last night and Sergio Romo, I don't know what Robbie Ray would do if he got challenged. But we'll see if Mattingly has that in store. Charlie Montoyo back in the game tonight. He missed out last night due to that suspension, so he'll be back in the dugout tonight.
Yeah.
But big win for the Jays last night. Let's see if they can carry it over. The Travelers beginning tomorrow.
Always a fun tournament to watch. Those last four holes have always been a favorite of mine to watch on tour. They got that short par four, drivable, and then they got the par three over water, another kind of challenging par four, and then 18. So that's always fun to watch coming down the stretch.
Yeah, it's a cool little track. It's a tight. It looks tight, doesn't it? Like, down the stretch anyway. Mm-hmm. It's like everything's into a valley. And
that was my first big league golf course I ever played.
Got
to Hartford. Sean Burke, Andrew Castles, Jeff Sanderson were like, hey, we're going golfing. You want to come? TPC Hartford.
How was your game back then?
Pretty good. Yeah, pretty good. Those guys were good, though. It was just my first kind of like, it was one of my first big league moments where, like, the cool guys on the team invited me to play. It's like, It was a really cool experience. Real good golf course.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And the big boys on the team hanging out. It was just cool. It was a really cool experience.
That's awesome. All right. Well, yeah. Guru, with that in mind, you got to pick a winner for this guy. He needs a winner.
So do you want me to just rattle off three in a row or go back and forth?
Give him three in a row.
Okay. For O-Dog, he gets Brooks Koepka.
Yes.
Abraham Answer.
Tiny Answer. I love it.
And Paul Casey.
I have nothing wrong with that at all.
I like Paul Casey. Now, can we confirm that Brooks Koepka is in it? I know his brother is in it, but we need to look this up quickly because I know I said the other day that he was there. I think he is. I'm pretty sure he's there.
Well,
yes, he
is.
I looked it up, and you're right. He's going off at one tomorrow. You're right. Yeah, he is. Okay, that's a good pick. So Koepka's there. You have Koepka, Answer, and Casey.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it for the O-Dog. All right, Guru, okay. Who do you have for me, a three-pack?
Brian Hayes gets Dustin Johnson.
Oh, yes. Won it last year.
Winner last year, by the way.
Loves that track. Yeah.
Tony Finau.
Finau is so due. He was terrible at Torrey Pines.
And Max Homa.
He was brutal, too. I don't love Homa, man. He had a great start at Riviera, and he's been
pretty awful.
You want
Casey for Homa?
No, I don't. Casey's getting a lot of love. I mean, there's a lot of people picking Casey.
You want Answer for Homa?
Why are you trading my picks?
Wait a minute.
Like
what do you feel? I'll make a deal. I'll give up Homa for...
Tiny Answer?
For a Tiny Dancer? Really?
Yeah, fine. Yep.
All right. I'll take Homa for Tiny Answer.
You good with that, Guru? I hope you're okay with that.
But you know what concerns me is one of you just may have traded away a winner. That's the thing. I don't know who. But
if Answer wins, I'll never do this again, ever.
Well, is he due? Is he on the cusp? Is he one of those guys that you think?
Tiny Answer, so here's the deal with him. He almost won the Masters a couple years ago. This guy went out of his mind, 86 Jack Nicklaus on the back, whatever he was doing. He was incredible. And ever since then, everyone's like, oh, yeah, Answer's due to, and he just really hasn't done much since.
All right, fair enough.
Well, yeah, there's some validity in that, but, I mean, Max Homa, he won a Riviera. That was a big win for him. But outside of that, I don't think he's been really in action lately. He hasn't been playing so well. Anyway, I'll take it. DJ Finau and Answer, you've got Koepka, Homa, and Paul Casey. There it is, the Guru. Yeah, I like those picks. Guru, yeah. Very quality stuff.
Figured I'd give you something to think about, to chew on.
Yeah.
Hopefully these guys are
well, DJ wins every single season on tour. He wins at least once. So he has not won yet in 2021. It's going to happen, I believe, at some point. And why not go back-to-back at the Travelers?
There you go.
Right? Like, that's when he really got hot, I think, last year, was at the Travelers. And then beyond that, it was like, see you later. This guy took off.
He didn't do so well after the Travelers, though.
Was that when he went 80-80 and then was a mess
was like,
for a while?
Check, please, see you later.
Yeah.
And then he reappeared and was dynamite.
Yeah, he certainly was. So there you have it. All right, the Traveler picks are in, and the Euros, we've all got three teams left, so we feel good about those tickets moving into the round of 16, and we got a three-hour show again as of tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been doing these two-hour shows for the better part of two and a half weeks, and back into the three-hour shows tomorrow. So we'll be coming off the Blue Jay game tonight down in Miami. And,
Wait a second. When does the soccer start back up?
I believe early next week. I'd have to look that up, but... By next week, I think it's back to kind of a similar type of schedule where we're on at 5 for a final 2 hours. But now that you're into the knockout stage, everything kind of changes a little bit.
Exactly.
But it's been a fun tournament so far. So we got that. We got the Jays tonight, and you got Islanders taking on Tampa and Milwaukee and Atlanta. There's a lot going on, you know, middle of June. A lot going on in the sports world. We appreciate everyone joining us today. We have Bobby Webster on earlier this afternoon. Obviously, Ray, Brian Windhorst, Kevin Kilbane joining us for the first time. We've got to get him back on down the road. Legend. So it's been a fun show. Shout out to everyone behind the scenes for helping us get on and get up and do our thing. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We are back tomorrow at...
You've texted Casey, but he ghosts you. 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.